Hey everybody, Paul Boyer here.
Mad Money Machine Season 2, Episode 9 for Friday, July 25th, 2014. Coming up on this episode, a little bit more information about how I lost your BitPay donations and resolving the details about that. Talking about the BitLicense and more.
Broadcasting from the Bitcoin bunker, six blocks below, brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil. This is Bitcoin versus the man. This is the battle of the century. This is the Mad Money Machine.
The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Brawker.com, Brawker.com. Before you buy it, Brawker it. And if you haven't gone out to Brawker.com yet, well, let me tell you something. You will. Yes, you will. So let's talk Bitcoin. Has this thing called Magic Words, where podcasts on the LTB network will say a magic word during the podcast, and you go out to letstalkbitcoin.com and click on a button there and enter the magic word. And if you do it within 4 days of the publication of this podcast, you get a split of the amount of the LTB coin that they're going to distribute for that magic word. So, you know, I'm going to tell you a magic word, but I'm also going to go out and enter the magic word myself and get a piece of that. I think I get a piece of it. I don't know. This is the first time doing it. So it's in my best interest for fewer people to get the magic word. So the magic word for this episode is Numino Ultramicroscopic Silicovolcano Coniosis. Just kidding. No, I'm going to make it in a little bit more of a scavenger hunt. What you're going to do is you're going to go to Brawker.com. Brawker.com. Go up at the top there and click on the register button, the register link. Up comes a pop-up window. You type in the third word you see across there in blue. It's six letters long. It's the third word there in blue at the top of this pop-up window after you click the register link at Brawker.com. That's the magic word for this Mad Money Machine episode. You got 4 days to go out to letstalkbitcoin.com and enter that magic word. And while you're at the register pop-up window, why don't you go ahead and sign up for an account with Brawker.com? It's free. Now, if you happen to be already logged in at Brawker.com, you won't see that register link at the top. So you'll need to go to the top and log out and then go to Brawker.com. And then you'll see the register link at the top. Click that. Up comes the pop-up window. It's the third word across there in blue. So the previous episode of the Mad Money Machine was how I lost your BitPay donations. And I wondered, you know, did I lose the wallet or did I get my Bitcoin stolen from BitPay? And I've gotten some answers for you, for me, for you. And within 2 hours of doing that podcast, Julia Patterson, a merchant specialist at BitPay, emailed me and she said she wanted to reach out on behalf of BitPay. They wanted to clarify the recent circumstance in which I discussed in my podcast. They've reviewed the account. It appears it was created back in 2013 or whenever. It says, when you created your account, we did not have a Bitcoin wallet address on file. This caused your Bitcoin donations to accumulate until we were provided with a wallet address where we could make daily payouts. And there was a wallet address that was entered on June 26th. And so the balance of 3.3875 Bitcoins was paid out the next day, June 27th. And of course, that wasn't my Bitcoin address, but how do they know that? They don't know that. Somebody got into my Bitcoin account, just guessing my password or hacking my password or stealing my password or keystroke capturing my password without two-factor authentication. Got in, put their Bitcoin address in the payout link and got the Bitcoin the next day. There was a subsequent $85 transaction to that wallet, which was not from BitPay. So the thief got Bitcoin from somewhere else and sent it to that same address. Then the wallet's address was changed on July 1st. And that, of course, was me getting into my account, changing that payout address. And I emailed her back and said, thank you very much. That info was excellent. But did BitPay send me an email indicating that I had entered or changed a wallet address? And I asked for a few more details, and she wrote back. She say, BitPay did not send this type of email out. As it stands now, our merchants are all required to enter payout information before they can access their profile. Since your account is quite old, you were not forced to enter a Bitcoin address or bank account information before you accessed your profile. And of course, she says, we realize that you would have found this type of email helpful, but we have a very small number of old accounts that do not have payout information. Of those small number of accounts, hardly any of them have a balance. And of course, mine didn't have a balance until last January when I started accepting donations. Your account is a bit of an anomaly, she says. And so indeed, I was the outlier. It's a comedy of errors. I made mistake of not using two-factor authentication. I made the mistake of not putting in a Bitcoin address where I should have. And I think they made a mistake of not having that process in place of either notifying me that I didn't have a Bitcoin address or notifying me immediately when a Bitcoin address was entered. But, you know, it's just one little guy doing dumb things. And thank goodness I didn't lose $500,000. Just lost 3.3875 Bitcoins. BitPay is doing great things, though. We'll get into more about what they're doing. They're in the news. And some of the neat things they're doing to help with security in just a little bit. But in the meantime, I am watching that Bitcoin address to see when those Bitcoins are spent. And when they are, the hammer of wrath is going to come down upon you, thief. In the news the past couple of weeks, Dell announces they accept Bitcoin when you buy something online with them. Isn't that pretty cool? I went out to their website just to confirm where it is and pretended to buy one of their little notebooks or something and got all the way to my shopping cart. And indeed, there's a link you can click. You can pay by the credit card, you can pay by PayPal, and you can pay with Bitcoin. I didn't get through the process. I haven't bought anything from Dell in a long time. I'm a Mac guy. I used to be a Windows guy back in Windows 95. Oh my goodness. August of 1995, I remember, they had Midnight Madness at, and I think it was Egghead Computer Store. Oh my goodness. You go buy the copy of Windows 95 when it very first came out. I was there at midnight, came home with my prize to install, probably on my Gateway computer at the time, Windows 95. But so I've got this Dell computer over here on my left. It's a big, one of those monster desktop, under the desk tower type computers, you know. I think it's running Windows, what is that running? Windows 98. Windows 98. Oh my goodness, how old is that? 16 years old operating system. I've got one thing on it that I can't do on a Mac. It's an Excel spreadsheet with a special plugin that gets stock quotes. And I also, there's another thing, actually, two things on it. There's an Excel spreadsheet from the Bogleheads forum that helps calculate the price returns of a portfolio of mutual funds. And you can go back 10, maybe even 12 years now to put in different percentages of different mutual funds and calculate the historical returns of that portfolio, what they call lazy portfolios, and doing a lot of lazy portfolio analysis. Well, since I got kind of out of that business, I had no need to have this computer up and running and generating heat. So now it's just sitting over here to the left, ready to go into deep cold storage into the basement. Bye-bye, Dell computer. Now, when Apple accepts Bitcoin, you may see me spend some of these Bitcoin. Actually, you know what, though? I could buy stuff from Apple using Bitcoin, and you know how to do it. Yes, if you've been listening to the Mad Money Machine, you know how to do it. Go to Brocker.com, click the Spend Bitcoins tab there, enter in there what I want you to buy for me using your credit card, and I would put in there an Apple Store gift card to be sent to me through email. Put in whatever amount. You buy it with your credit card. It gets sent to me. Then I pay you the Bitcoin equivalent for that gift card amount. You get the Bitcoins just by using your credit card. I get the new Apple computer. At Brocker.com, sponsor of the Mad Money Machine. Before you buy it, Brocker it. But getting back to that Dell computer with the Excel spreadsheets on it, you know, one of the neatest things about that spreadsheet was it would create a graph of the return versus risk for these lazy portfolio combinations over, say, a 10, 20-year duration. And so you would see a little point on a chart, and the y-axis would be the return, and the x-axis would be the risk. And risk is the volatility of the portfolio. That is how much it goes up and down over time. So you want on that chart to be as high as possible, that is the highest return, and you want to be as far left as possible, that is the least amount of risk. And that's why I moved to the Harry Brown Permanent Portfolio, which invests in basically four things: stocks, bonds, cash, and gold, because it had those characteristics of the highest return for the least amount of risk. In other words, the best Sharpe ratio. Well, if you don't understand risk ease, maybe you need to listen to step 8 in the 12-step program for active investors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 8, risk ease, the language of risk. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. So I asked myself, why am I taking so many chances with my money? So I said to my broker, I can't be on your roller coaster ride no more. It's about time to be moving along. I can't stand the stocks coming in and going out like a big bad storm. Let me tell you this, this is for sure. My door won't revolve around you no more. I know some folks riding their money around. What are you looking for? You had it all at home. You keep looking for more.
Roller coaster ride no more. It's about the time to be moving along, coming in and going out like a big bad storm. Let me tell you this, this is for sure. My door won't revolve around you no more. Riding around, riding.
Speak risk ease. Risk ease is the language that's used to discuss topics of risk, return, time, and correlation. High risk exposure is like a scream-inducing roller coaster with soaring highs and stomach-churning lows. On the roller coaster, the greater the ups and downs, the greater the returns, measured in thrills. The same thing applies to investing. However, not everyone has the capacity for such exposure to risk. Because risk is the source of returns, investors would be better served to be more concerned with the risk level of their investments. If you don't understand the roller coaster, if you don't speak risk ease, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue.
I want you to notice that I'm not asking BitPay to try to redeem my money. I think this is a pretty important mind shift that we have to get into. If it was a bank and somebody had gotten in and stole money from the bank, I would go to the bank and say, I want my money. You know, it's not my fault that someone got into the bank and stole my money. It's, you know, you pool the money in a bank, and if they steal money from the bank, you know, it's no big deal to me. I just want my money back. But I don't think we should treat Bitcoin like a bank. I think we should treat it like a wallet. I don't think we should pool our Bitcoin in a banking type arrangement. I think we should just keep a secure wallet that we can always access. There is a difference between Coinbase and blockchain.info. There's a difference between BitPay and blockchain.info. Now, Coinbase, you do hold your Bitcoins with them. It's held in their Bitcoin address until you decide to pay it out. BitPay, they hold it in their address for about a day till they pay it out. Blockchain, you hold it. So blockchain.info doesn't hold Bitcoin in their Bitcoin address. It's in your Bitcoin address. It's your wallet, your password, your two-factor authentication. It's just they facilitate you getting at your wallet through a web browser. Well, there are some neat technologies that people are working on to make it even better, to make it even more secure. Take, for example, cryptocorp.co or cryptocore.co if you prefer the silent P. You go out to their website, click on the Learn More button there, and they talk about securing wallets by integrating a third-party Oracle. They say in their executive summary there, the Bitcoin ecosystem has a security problem. Bitcoin assets are exposed to theft, fraud, malware, scams, and severe counterparty risk. Hosted wallets and exchanges can present even more risk to users than local storage. Every major hosted wallet and Bitcoin exchange is a massive target for fraud and theft. The stability and health of the Bitcoin ecosystem is dependent on the creation of tools for consumer protection, disbursement control, and treasury management. And they present the concept of an oracle, which is a trusted third party that signs transactions only when certain conditions are met in order to enforce security or implement other functions. HDM wallets, that is hierarchically deterministic multi-signature wallets, with a third-party oracle, can provide security while not compromising usability. That's what we want. We want easy of use, and we want high security. They say the user retains custody of 2 out of 3 keys and does not experience counterparty risk while still relying on a trustworthy third party to countersign normal transactions. The trusted third party, an oracle, vets transactions to protect a user from theft, fraud, and risk without being able to take possession of control of funds. The oracle can also alert the user to wallet compromise and merchants with negative reputation. And they present a scheme where their web service, the Digital Oracle, can integrate into any HDM wallet to protect users. They talk about counterparty risk. They say when users store their coins with a third party, such as a Bitcoin exchange, an escrow service, or a cloud wallet, the user is at risk that the counterparty will fail to return them. And this has been seen many times before with Bitfloor, Bitcoinica, Mt. Gox, and the Silk Road. Users are always strongly encouraged to hold coins in a system under their control, but that comes with a host of other risks, such as theft. Anyone who gains possession of the private keys can spend any Bitcoin it controls. And that, of course, presents a target for attackers looking to steal funds. If a user has a normal Bitcoin wallet on their computer or mobile phone, the keys are at risk of being copied and transmitted to an attacker by malware. Even if the keys are encrypted in the application, they are at risk when they are decrypted to sign transactions. Hundreds of thousands of Bitcoins representing hundreds of millions of dollars in value have been stolen directly from computers, mobile phones, and servers by gaining unauthorized access to private keys. And then there's fraud. Bitcoin transactions usually involve sending a payment to a freshly generated destination that is not intrinsically linked to the payee. This situation, combined with the fact that Bitcoin transactions are one way and cannot be reversed, creates an opportunity for fraud. Unscrupulous or fraudulent parties online can persuade a user to send payment to a particular address with promise of goods, services, repayment, etc., and then simply disappear with the Bitcoin. Because the user made the payment without any verified credentials from the merchant, they're left without recourse to recover their Bitcoin. And another common fraud in the Bitcoin ecosystem has been applications asking for access to Bitcoin wallets under false pretenses. And they say here that several Coinbase users lost their wallets after providing OAuth authentication and API keys. Embezzlement. Organizations using Bitcoin wallets must share their private keys with the user authorized to make payments. Because access to the private keys is an all-or-nothing affair, the organization leaves itself open to the user making unauthorized transactions, up to and including emptying the wallet. And then, of course, there's physical loss. If you lose your wallet, you lose all your Bitcoin. Their solution is the Oracle solution. They integrate user-controlled Bitcoin wallets with a third-party Oracle. They say, we envision a world where the safety and convenience of transactions are assured in every Bitcoin wallet. Users are protected from theft and fraud by using a 2-of-3 multi-signature scheme between their wallet, a physical recovery key, and the Oracle Protection Service. Consumers also benefit from custom-defined business rules integrated directly into wallets that allow for vendor-specific gift balances, spending controls for dependents, different budgets, etc. Enterprises can integrate deeply with the Oracle to build the same financial controls into Bitcoin wallets that they already build into their existing corporate check-in accounts. And here is the way that they perform fraud prevention. They classify every transaction by employing a weighted risk score. The digital Oracle paradigm for signing a transaction will depend on the risk score. So for low-risk transactions, which are small transactions that are two known destinations, the digital Oracle will immediately countersign them. In these cases, the digital Oracle does not add any significant delay to the processing of a Bitcoin transaction. A medium-risk transaction is where large, unanticipated transactions to known destinations or small series of transactions to unknown destinations occur. These transactions could trigger a delay with an out-of-band notification, such as an email or phone call, to confirm or deny the transaction. This enables the user to monitor these transactions to ensure they are aware of the higher risk and to ensure that the transactions are authorized. Sounds like a really good idea to get a notification before someone empties out your Bitcoin address, doesn't it? Where have I heard that before? Well, high-risk transactions are transactions that attempt to empty the wallet and are not internal transfers. These transactions are not merely moving money around, but are actually draining the account substantially or entirely to a completely unknown destination. The digital Oracle will trigger a long delay and use all available out-of-band notification methods. Well, I think this is a pretty cool system. And of course, you know, they hold one of the keys to make the transaction happen. You hold the main other key to sign the transaction to get at your Bitcoin address, unlock your wallet. But then, what if you didn't trust them at some point? You'd still do have that third key. Now, this is a third key that could be essentially a recovery key. Typically, if you lost the password to your first key, you could still access transactions by using that recovery key. But you could use that first key along with the recovery key to force a transaction to happen without the use of the Oracle. Now, of course, you don't want a thief to get access to both of those keys, so the recovery key should be kept extremely secure, offline if possible, and used only in the event of an emergency. So I like this idea, and I think the more systems, online wallets that use this kind of technology, the better off we'll be. Make it easy to use, make it very secure to use, and Bitcoin is really going to grow. We're eliminating the reliance on a trusted third party here, but we're getting assistance from a trusted third party here, and it's really kind of cool. We're eliminating the banking aspect, in this case, of Bitcoin. We don't rely on someone else holding our Bitcoin for us. Now, there's still going to be services out there, even if we utilize this, make it easy to use, make it secure, holding our own wallets, I can imagine there will still be services out there where we need to rely on a trusted third party to hold Bitcoins for us, at least for some small amount of time. And this would be, at least for the short term, Bitcoin exchanges, where you're exchanging dollars or fiat currency into and out of Bitcoin, or trading Bitcoin for another cryptocurrency, until we get decentralized transactions that allow us to perform peer-to-peer exchanges, then these centralized exchanges are a necessary evil in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Now, that necessary evil, I'll yield slightly that those might be subject to some regulation. I can't believe I'm saying this. And maybe I wish I hadn't said it. Because I really prefer to have decentralized peer-to-peer exchanges where there's no trusted third party in the middle that can be regulated. I'm going to talk about the New York Department of Financial Services proposed regulation on Bitcoin companies in just a minute. But before I do, I want to talk about another company that's getting into this multi-signature process for Bitcoin and helping things, and that's BitPay. Now, for dramatic effect, I should probably talk about BitPay's new beta service first, because it's slightly less capable than the CryptoCorp.co service. BitPay's promoting something called CoPay.io. CoPay.io is a beta web wallet that uses multi-sig. It's an easy-to-use multi-signature Bitcoin wallet, bringing corporate-level security to ordinary people. And so a company could set this up where it requires N of M. Is that the right way, or M of N? Some number of corporate officers to enter their keys to enable a Bitcoin transaction. They say the advantage of it is it's decentralized and that you shouldn't have to depend on a central organization to use Bitcoin. CoPay has almost no dependence on servers, and the servers it does use are open source and can be run by anybody. As web browsers become more capable, eventually the servers stop being necessary altogether. They say CoPay is possible due to recent advances in web technology that allow your Bitcoins to be stored locally and not on a server, and for the co-payers to communicate peer-to-peer rather than through a server. And they say they also use the most modern Bitcoin protocols that allow you to back up your wallet once, and you never have to worry about backing it up again. And the advantage is that it is open source. And it has been since day one. They welcome other people to copy and give back to CoPay. They've developed CoPay for internal use at BitPay. But we all win if everybody has secure Bitcoins, which is best made possible with open source. Now, it is in beta. They have downloadable browser extensions. They have an Android version of it, and they have a web version of it that you can go out and try at copay.io. So would CryptoCorp and CoPay, would they be subject to the New York Department of Financial Services Bitcoin regulations or not? Before I get into the regulations, I want to thank some of the sponsors for the Mad Money Machine, some of the supporters for Mad Money Machine. Thank you, Brocker.com. Thank you, Tron Black at CoinCPA.com. Track the value of your Bitcoin or any other coin at CoinCPA.com, always SSL secured. Tracks coins online, offline, exchanges, pools, personal alerts, and API for developers. And I'd like to thank Rob Mitchell. His message to me says, may your Bitcoin and LTB coin stay safe. He is the guy behind BKeychain.com. I got my BKeychain in the mail. Thank you, Rob. It's a circular keychain. Holds your keys. It's got the Bitcoin symbol on one side, and it says Bitcoin cryptocurrency on the back. Beautiful brass keychain. A great conversation piece, a must for any Bitcoin holder. BKeychain.com. If you'd like to have your message read on the Mad Money Machine, go to madmoneymachine.com and click on the donate button over to the right. It'll take you out to BitPay. where you can enter a four-line message of text that I'll read on the show. And if it doesn't quite fit into four lines, just email me. I'll do you right. Your donation in the amount of 0.06 bitcoins or more will get your message read on the show. Thanks for supporting the Mad Money Machine. Without your support, the show would not be possible.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
I have read it. It's 40 pages long. It's Title 23, Chapter 1, Part 200, Virtual Currencies from the New York State Department of Financial Services. They go into introduction and definitions and license and application fees. What's missing from this regulation is the purpose. There's no section up front that says, what is the purpose of these regulations? And let me just stop and say, this is not a law, this is a regulation. What's the difference? Law is created by elected representatives, and they vote and create the law. Here we have bureaucrats that are hired into their position, and they just decide what the regulation should be amongst themselves. Or they're influenced by wealthy corporate partners into making regulation. I mean, this is very clearly a bank-influenced set of regulations. It's almost as if Benjamin Lawski is working for the banking cartel and in trying to shut out competition with these regulations. In fact, in one of the sections, it says an exclusion to these regulations are banks. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that fair? Yeah, here it is. Section 200.3, exemption from licensing requirements. Section C, Part 1, persons that are chartered under the New York banking law to conduct exchange services and are approved by the superintendent to engage in virtual currency business activity. Oh, isn't that nice? Thank you, Benjamin Lawski, for exempting your little banking buddies from requiring themselves to be fingerprinted and photographed and 10 years of records kept and holding all of the Bitcoin profits in dollars instead of in Bitcoin. This is just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, do we need regulation or could we just use commonly accepted business practices? Can't the market decide who we should go to trust for our Bitcoin exchange? You know, I mean, Mt. Gox comes back online. There will be people that put their Bitcoin in Mt. Gox again. But I got to tell you, there'll be a whole lot of people that would not trust Mt. Gox again with their Bitcoin. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And people will learn not to put more than they can afford to lose with these trusted third parties. But like I was saying, there's no purpose in these regulations. They're not stating what the purpose is. What is the purpose? Oh, they've talked about things like anti-money laundering in the past. But perhaps the purpose is to eliminate competition from the banks. If that's the purpose of these regulations are going to be successful because they're going to significantly hinder Bitcoin startup businesses from operating in the state of New York or with residents of the state of New York. I can imagine that Bitcoin exchanges, Bitcoin trusted third parties that are on the internet would have a little login page or a sign-up page, and it would ask the question, are you a resident of the state of New York, yes or no? If you click yes, it'll take you to a page that says, sorry, due to the New York Department of Financial Services regulations, we cannot do business with residents of the state of New York. Please go elsewhere. Or maybe the purpose of this regulation is to make money for the state of New York. Here is section 200.12, subsection C, subsection C. Records of non-completed, outstanding, or inactive virtual currency accounts or transactions shall be maintained for at least 5 years after the time when any such virtual currency has been deemed under the abandoned property law to be abandoned property. And of course, you know what that means. Oh, yeah, when it becomes abandoned property, then the state of New York gets those bitcoins. So if the purpose of the regulation is to make money for the state, then the regulation is serving its purpose. Or maybe the purpose of the regulation is to snoop on people in their private business transactions. Section 200.15, subsection D, subsection 2, reports on transactions. When a licensee is involved in a transaction or series of transactions for the receipt, exchange, conversion, purchase, sale, transfer, or transmission of virtual currency in an aggregate amount exceeding the United States dollar value of $10,000 in one day by one person, the licensee shall notify the department in a manner prescribed by the superintendent within 24 hours. So if the purpose of these regulations is just to snoop on people, then these regulations serve their purpose. Or if the purpose is to eliminate anonymous transactions, check out Section F. No licensee shall engage in, facilitate, or knowingly allow the transfer or transmission of virtual currency when such action will obfuscate the identity of an individual customer or counterparty, which basically means it can't be anonymous. You can't have anonymous transactions using Bitcoin if you're working with a Bitcoin licensee of the state of New York. Let the future be dark. Or is the purpose behind these regulations for Ben Lawsky to make a name for himself and to get on TV? Let's find out.
Bit licenses, months in the making. How's it going to work?
Well, it's interesting. So we put out the framework today. It's a comprehensive framework. It covers basically anyone operating in a significant commercial way in the Bitcoin space. And it's out for a 45-day comment period.
Now, that's actually been quite a bone of contention in the Bitcoin sphere. 45 days. Hey, Ben, you've been working on this for a year, and you give us 45 days to comment on it? No, give us a year to comment on it.
Which is important because this is complicated stuff. It's new, it's modern, and we need to get it right. And already the Twitter traffic coming right at us is, you know, what about this, what about that? And people who are deep into the technology here are thinking of things we might have missed. So in a way, I'm very excited. We've got this new framework. I think it's a great day for the virtual currency industry.
You think it's a great day, and a lot of us think it's a very dark day.
In terms of the future, at the same time, we need to get these regs right. We're going to take those comments and try to, in about 45 days, get the regulations finalized.
Isn't that just so disingenuous? You remember the hearings that he had with representatives from the Bitcoin world saying, don't put these kind of regulations on Bitcoin. And what did he do? He went out and put these kind of regulations on Bitcoin. He listened to nothing that the Bitcoin people who came in to testify said. Nothing. He already had these proposed regulations written, and he put that on for show. And this is all just glorifying his ambitions.
What is the process of getting a BIT license in that? How does it protect people from the fraud, from the problems that we've seen, the criminal activity that we've seen associated
right. So
with Bitcoin?
It's a long regulatory scheme that we've put out.
Yeah, there, I think he kind of admits it. It's overbearing on Bitcoin companies.
But the three biggest components really are, there's a big anti-money laundering component to make sure we don't have a massive money laundering going on in the industry.
Yeah, Ben, could you characterize exactly how much money laundering has been going on in the industry so far?
There's a big consumer protection component, so people, regular consumers who are going to either exchange Bitcoin or do other things, they are going to know what they're getting into very clearly.
And do we really need government to tell us what we're getting into? Look at all the reviews I can look up on Yelp, or on Amazon, on Rotten Tomatoes. We can have reviews for Bitcoin services just like that.
And then third, we have a big cybersecurity component because hacking is getting more sophisticated and there's a big cybersecurity potential issue in this industry if you don't address it correctly.
I am all for cybersecurity, but your Department of Financial Services is in no way qualified to make Bitcoin industry secure.
You know, you should be congratulated for grappling with this. It's a very difficult thing for you. And you have to respond in some form, and that's what you're doing here.
Congratulated? No, CNBC. To be reviled.
The central question is, can you make it safe? And at the heart of that, your answer surely has to be no. As somebody put it recently, Bitcoin is just a machine. The Bitcoin itself can be bought or attacked or broken. And if Mt. Gox had been under your jurisdiction, I'm not sure you could have protected and prevented those losses of $300-400 million.
And here this guy actually got it right. Yes, Ben Lawski couldn't have prevented it. That's what I'm saying. Their regulations aren't going to do anything.
No, look, fair point. I think my hope is if Mt. Gox had been under our jurisdiction under these rules or rules like them, we would have been able to prevent that. But I do think you're right.
Well, hang on. Yeah. There was, they say, a sustained cyber attack which brought the entire platform down, and I don't know what the present figure is, $300-400 million were lost. How would your regulations up front have prevented that?
Right, well, so we have a big cybersecurity component in these regulations, for example, where we're going to go in and test the cybersecurity readiness of these firms in New York.
And actually, yeah, if this regulation does go through, this will be a massive jobs program for cybersecurity professionals in New York City. Section 200.15, subsection F, subsection 1, personnel and intelligence. Each licensee shall employ cybersecurity personnel adequate to manage the licensee's cybersecurity risks and to perform the core cybersecurity functions specified in subsection blah, 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 blah. Hey, it'd be even better if it required Benjamin Lawski's own cybersecurity team to come in and perform all these penetration tests and source code reviews. That way, Benjamin Lawski is in charge of more and more people in his little bureaucratic organization.
To make sure they're doing everything they can to prevent that kind of hacking attack. That said, look, you could say that about our entire banking industry, too. We should be doing that with everyone. I mean, and this is a larger conversation maybe for another day, but we need to do a lot better as regulators and as industries to gird ourselves for these kind of cyber attacks.
Here's a better idea. How about New York politicians pass a law making it illegal for some bureaucrat to regulate the Bitcoin industry in the state of New York? Now, I've had Bitcoin stolen, but I don't want the industry to be regulated. I want technology and market forces to provide the solution for us. I want government to get out of the way. These regulations will only delay innovation and increase costs to us, the consumer, and of course, they're not going to work anyway. For a more balanced opinion, let's hear from Charles Allen, CEO of the Bitcoin Shop. He was on Bloomberg.
You see this as a positive or a negative right now for Bitcoin?
I think it's somewhere in between. I think we need regulation in Bitcoin. Consumers need to be protected, and companies need guidance on how to move within the space. But this is a bit heavy-handed in many ways.
How do you see this heavy-handed?
There are a few areas. I mean, one, it covers payment processors, which I don't think should be covered. As it affects our business, at least they carved out merchants accepting Bitcoins as well as loyalty programs. But the whole M&A aspect of it is not great. If you're a 10% holder, over a 10% holder in a business, it subjects you to almost inspection, right? So if you're a venture capital firm that is invested in a Bitcoin company doing this, they may have to go and get information from you, which is not great for innovation. So there's a lot of little things that could be changed in this, and some bigger ones as well.
At the same time, one would have to think that the regulation might help inspire some businesses that might have been on the fence to go ahead and use Bitcoin, accept Bitcoin, and that's got to be a positive for the cryptocurrency.
Having regulation allows larger companies to come in. I mean, this is, when I looked at the kind of the application process, if you are a public company, if you are a FINRA broker dealer, or you're a large bank or a money service business, this is very easy for you to do. If you are a startup company in the venture capital space, complying with these regulations is going to be quite a challenge. So, as a public company, we check most of the boxes if we wanted to move into this area. Except for kind of compliance, but a lot of the stuff we already have done. We have audits. I think it's a barrier for innovation.
New Bitcoin startup businesses, in your view?
I think there'll be a shift in how they operate, which is, for the most part, in many respects, very good. They do need to grow up, but I think it's a challenge. I mean, companies raising under $1 million to start in this space with this type of regulation will be very challenging. So I think you'll see. There'll be more professionals that will need to come into the space. I'd expect more broker-dealers to come in. So it pushes it towards bigger companies.
It's got some good and some bad, it sounds like, in your view. Let me just ask you, as New York begins to roll this out, how much of a template could this state be for the rest of the country?
Well, that's the issue. Is it could be the template, and I'd like to see it refined. I hope this is not the end all. I would really like to see something that's a little bit more measured, that has a little bit, doesn't have a 10-year retention policy on documents. That seems a bit heavy-handed. 5 years would suffice.
And that's the little trick. See, they overreach in these regulations, only to step back a little bit. We're going to ask for 10 years. No, please, only 5. Okay, 5 years. This is called foot in the door. It's anchoring. It's the Overton window. It's the battered spouse syndrome. It's problem reaction solution. It's good cop, bad cop, all rolled into one.
A 10% controlling interest it seems like a bit much. So I'd really like to see this refined.
Okay,
payment processor shouldn't be in it.
Will this help to iron out some of the volatility in Bitcoin? Because that's really what it comes down to. People are reluctant to use it because they're concerned about whether it's going to go up or down. Primarily down in value is their fear.
Or that's why people are investing. They think it's going to go up. So I don't know if this will help volatility. The biggest issue with volatility is it's a small float. There's
right.
a lot of
so
Bitcoins in a small holding.
So if more people use it because they feel more comfortable with it because it's regulated, then theoretically it should help even out some of that volatility.
I would think, but it's going to take time. So, it's just
we'll
a question
see.
Of time.
What is it about Bloomberg and CNBC and these mainstream media outlets that they're so for regulation, so for larger government? I just don't understand it. Well, that's enough about the BitLicense. I'm sure you've read about it in other places. Maybe you haven't heard my 15 minutes of hate. Now, let's take a deep breath, though. Deep breaths. It's all going to be just fine. It's all going to work out. They're not going to be able to regulate Bitcoin away. Nope. They're not going to be able to stifle innovation. The future of Bitcoin's dark. Relax. Take a deep breath. Hum a little bit if it helps a little bit. Bitcoin is going to work out just fine. It's going to work. It's going to be okay. 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 And to learn more about relaxation techniques, let's go visit him in Satoshi's Corner.
Satoshi no Corner.
Well, when the Bitcoin client first made available by Satoshi, there were two ways to send Bitcoin to people. You could use the Bitcoin address like we do now, or you could use an IP address back then. You could actually use their direct computer's IP address to connect with them and transfer Bitcoin. But one of the users out on the BitcoinTalk.org forum, his username is Roger Rabbit, he said, you can't send messages to Bitcoin users unless it's the IP system. He says, that seems unnecessary. Any reasoning behind this? He says, I think people will use Bitcoin addresses a lot more often than the IP address when sending or receiving coins. And then somebody else said, I think it has some technical limitations. Satoshi, could you tell us more about this? And Satoshi writes, yes, it's a technical limitation. Sending by Bitcoin address enters the transaction into the network, and the recipient discovers it from the network. You don't connect directly with them, and they don't have to be online at the time. I very much wanted to find some way to include a short message. But the problem is, the whole world would be able to see the message. As much as you may keep reminding people that the message is completely non-private, it would be an accident waiting to happen. Unfortunately, the ECDSA, that's the elliptic curve algorithm, can only sign signatures. It can't encrypt messages. And we need the small size of ECDSA. RSA can encrypt messages, but it's many times bigger than ECDSA. That's from January 28th, 2010. And that's from Satoshi Nakamoto. Let's pull something out of the Madman Machine Bitcoin tool crib. Well, in the wake of being hacked, supposedly, one of my Twitter followers said you should run an antivirus on your Mac, such as Sophos. So, I went and I thought, yeah, you know, that'd be kind of cool if Sophos would find something on my Mac and I could get rid of it. So I went and downloaded Sophos, the antivirus software, loaded it up, ran it. It started out saying that there's about 5 million items it's going to sort through on my Mac. It's going to sift through 5 million items on my Mac. And the countdown begins, you know. I let it run all day long. And at the end, it found nothing. Nothing. Am I disappointed or am I happy? I'm not sure. I'm happy that there are no viruses, but I'm kind of disappointed that it didn't find something that I could get rid of. I don't know whether to recommend this tool or not. I've never found a virus with an antivirus software program. And from what I understand, even antivirus software makers say these tools aren't effective anymore. The question is, am I recommending this as a tool on the Madman Machine or not? But there's one thing I can tell you, though. Like the best things in life, it's free. In the Bitcoin news at this hour, coming to you from Coindesk.com, Ecuador bans Bitcoin, plans its own digital money. Air Baltic accepts Bitcoin and waives the controversial Bitcoin transaction fee. OKCoin denies manipulating Bitcoin trading volumes. Austria offers contradictory guidance on Bitcoin's financial status. And Barry Silbert resigns second market CEO position to focus solely on a Bitcoin venture. Well, I want to thank you for joining me this bi-week on the Mad Money Machine. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes millibits to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next on Friday, August 8th, 2 weeks from today, 3 p.m. Don't forget, you've got 4 days to enter your magic word at letstalkbitcoin.com. Click on the top button up there and get into the magic words section. Your magic word for today, go to brocker.com. Click on the register link at the top, and when the pop-up window comes up, it's the third word across. It's got 6 letters in the word. And remember, if you're already logged into Brocker.com, you'll need to log out to see that register link at the top. Keep listening for the Madman Machine After Party, where we'll talk a little bit more about the simulation. And we'll have a great tune. If you'd like to communicate with me, send out a tweet at Mad Money Machine. I'm also at Facebook, Mad Money Machine. The website is, guess what, madmoneymachine.com. Email me, bitcoin at madmoneymachine, or call the voicemail line using that old-fashioned phone technology at 571-366-7121. See you in 2 weeks. Well, I certainly appreciate you allowing me to go to a bi-weekly schedule. I've been able to do a little bit more golfing the past couple of weeks. I've shot one of my career low rounds. It's one of the few times I've broken 80. Thank you very much. Subsequent round, I made an eagle. It's only one of my 4 eagles plus 2 hole-in-ones that I've ever had. So I'm enjoying the beautiful outdoors. The outdoors, which is made possible, of course, by the grand simulation that we're living in. Well, the simulators wanted to devise a way, some way, to allow us to communicate with them. But they didn't want us to actually know for a fact that they exist. That's too easy. No, the way this game is played is you kind of have to find that out for yourself, that they exist. You kind of have to become enlightened to know that the simulators exist. Now, what if the simulators just absolutely got exasperated because the people playing the game, they just couldn't seem to get it right? What if the simulators said, you know what, we're going to have to kind of intervene here. This game's not really kind of working out to the grand design. So what if they were to try to communicate a little bit more directly to the simulants, the people inside the simulation? What would they do? They might have to kind of intervene into the simulation. They might have to send a player into the game who's like a super user, who knows, you know, the super user knows that he's part of the simulation. He knows that this is actually a simulation and that there are simulants out there creating the simulation, and tries to convey to people, here's the rules of the game. It's all about love and compassion, folks. The super simulant tries to set an example for people, tries to tell them directly. Will they listen to him or will they not listen to him? Would his words be written down and communicated for ages and generations yet to come? And would people become enlightened enough to realize, yeah, these are the rules of the simulation, love and compassion? Or would they become jealous of the super simulant and just kill him? Just something to think about as we make our way through the game. The Fix is on tour. TheFix.com. That's two X's, just like in Exxon. They did release a new album a couple years ago, Beautiful Friction. I recommend it. This song's not from Beautiful Friction, though, but it's a good song if you're living in the simulation. It's called How Much Is Enough, and it's available on YouTube.
Would you bid $27 to buy? Number 27, I'm bid now. Number 29, number 29, number 29, number 30, number 30, now I have, 30 and a half, now 1, number 31 and a half, number 2. How much is enough?
Good enough, it's not good enough. So much more. God, please don't set you free. Can't you see that time is slipping away? But I gotta say, how much is enough? Your soul is empty. How much is enough in the land of plenty? When you have all you want and you still feel nothing at all, how much is
Yeah, I've been hoping the Fix would come to my town, into my little theater here, and play like so many other small bands, old rocker bands have done. And they are coming. But guess what? It's the same day as the first preseason football game. So now what am I supposed to do? There's just too much entertainment and not enough time. I guess that's why I'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care, everybody, and keep your Bitcoin safe.